FM WPFP. Translator W276 DJ at 103.1 FM Park Falls, Wisconsin. Broadcasting from an old rickety shack on the shores of the Flambeau River. This is Jack FM.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. National Transportation Safety Board investigators have arrived in Portland, Oregon to determine what caused a section of an Alaska Airlines Boeing 737 fuselage to break off mid-flight Friday. NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy said this happened at a higher altitude, it would have been worse.
We could have ended up with something so much more tragic, and really fortunate that that did not occur here.
The FAA ordering the grounding of 737 MAX 9s until they are inspected today. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken meeting with Jordan's King Abdullah and Foreign Minister visiting a World Food Program warehouse in Amman as he pressed ahead with an urgent Middle East diplomatic mission to prevent Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza from spreading. 50 million Americans under winter weather alerts as cross-country storm is lashing the Northeast with heavy snow and rain. Other storm heading for the Pacific Northwest. Barbie and Oppenheimer, the favorites at tonight's Golden Globe Awards. This is ABC News. President Biden invited to Capitol Hill.
The date is set for the State of the Union. President Biden accepted the invite from GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson to address the joint session of Congress on March 7th. It is a tradition and necessity for the president to be invited to the Capitol to update Congress. In the weeks leading up to the address, the president and lawmakers are tasked with preventing a government shutdown, along with finding bipartisan support for a border security funding and military aid package for Ukraine and Israel. Michelle Franz and ABC News.
The carnival season has begun in New Orleans as the countdown to Fat Tuesday kicked off last night. Dozens of costumed revelers and a brass band crowded into a streetcar for a nighttime ride down the historic St. Charles Avenue. And Mark Romig of the tourism agency New Orleans & Company says,
this past year, 23, was an amazing Mardi Gras. We felt very good about it. And we think 24 is going to be as good, if not better.
Dave Packer, ABC News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Voting is not only good for democracy. One of the nation's biggest medical associations says it's also good for your health. Catherine Carley explains.
The American College of Physicians says voting empowers people to engage with their community, while ballot initiatives and elected officials determine just how well the healthcare system works. So ACP President Omar Atik says voters ultimately determine people's access to healthcare services and physicians' ability to treat them.
If there is more voter participation, there will be better healthcare policies and therefore better healthcare.
Atik says research shows states with fewer barriers to voting have better health outcomes than states with restrictive voting laws or gerrymandered maps. The ACP is encouraging all healthcare professionals and medical students to engage patients in nonpartisan healthcare-related conversations about voting as a way to increase health equity. Atik says even posting voter registration information in patient waiting rooms is a good place to start.
We are looking at talking to patients about the importance of their voice in making sure that the national resources are allocated to where we have optimal health for everyone.
Atik says despite being one of the richest and most technically advanced nations in the world, the U.S. ranks lowest in life expectancy for both men and women among comparable countries. He says physicians have a responsibility to help their patients when they need it, and talking about voting on issues that improve health care is part of that help. I'm Catherine Carley. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Badgers win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers paced themselves to an 88-72 win over Nebraska at the Kohl Center. Tyler Wall with 17 points for Wisconsin. Head coach Greg Gard says he was proud how the Badgers played the Cornhuskers on defense.
I thought we did a lot of good things. You know, and they hit some tough shots, and they hit 12 threes, you know, and I thought some of them, you know, there is a team that scored a lot of points, too. And the biggest thing with them was trying to minimize the attempts. I want them not to be able to get them off.
They'll take on Ohio State on Wednesday. A another loss on the road for number 7th-ranked Marquette. They lost at Seton Hall, 78-75. The Golden Eagles host Butler Wednesday night. UWM with a win over Detroit Mercy, 84-61. NBA, the Bucks lose again, this time to the Houston Rockets, 112-108. Giannis Antetokounmpo with 48 points, but a bad night for Damian Lillard, who had just 18. Milwaukee heading home now after this road trip. They host the Utah Jazz Monday. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This weather update is sponsored by Hansen HVAC Heating and Cooling, your local Armstrong Air dealer of Phillips and Manitowish Waters.
Here's your 103.1 Jack FM weatherology forecast. Chance for snow today, otherwise overcast skies. High temperatures reach up to 28. Winds out of the northwest, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Lows level off around 13, highs around 29. Tomorrow, cloudy. Temperatures a bit above average Tuesday and Wednesday, with highs from the upper 20s to the low 30s. Snow possible both days. Taking a look at the extended forecast, 22 Thursday, 13 Friday, and 13 on Saturday. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Tuesday. From the Weatherology Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently 26.
This is Radio Health Journal, a weekly news magazine with the latest in health, medicine, and technology. I'm Shel Lustig.
I'm Greg Johnson.
And I'm Elizabeth Westfield. This week, does the average person have enough knowledge to make major medical decisions?
Basically, we have a lot of choice, a lot of responsibility, and not always all the tools and information to handle it.
Then, how doctors can stay patient-focused in the ICU.
I now really value that component of my being at the bedside with these people more than I do the procedures, the beeps, and the buzzers.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
Denise has been playing jazz for 40 years. Last concert, one of the musicians fell sick with RSV. Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is a highly contagious virus that can lead to breathing problems. This time, she's choosing to help protect herself with Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo. Abrysvo is a vaccine for the prevention of lower respiratory tract disease caused by respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, in adults 60 years of age and older. Abrysvo is not for everyone and may not protect all who receive the vaccine. Don't get Abrysvo if you've had a severe allergic reaction to its ingredients. People with a weakened immune system may have a decreased response to Abrysvo. The most common side effects are tiredness, headache, pain at the injection site, and muscle pain. Ask your pharmacist or doctor about Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo, respiratory syncytial virus vaccine. For full prescribing information, please call 1-844-989-7284 or visit Abrysvo.com. Brought to you by Pfizer.
In today's healthcare world, there's more patient choice than ever before. In fact, we make decisions about our health every day, sometimes without even realizing it. We choose one allergy medication over another at the grocery store, or we look online and decide to go to the highest rated orthopedic specialist for knee surgery. In economics, choice always seems like a good thing. But with so many options, do regular people have the tools they need to make medical decisions?
Basically, we have a lot of choice, a lot of responsibility, and not always all the tools and information to handle it.
That's Dr. Talia Mirenschatz, visiting researcher at the University of Cambridge and author of the book, Your Life Depends on It, What You Can Do to Make Better Choices About Your Health. Mirenschatz says today we've become healthcare consumers, meaning just like we have a choice in what restaurant we go to or what jeans to buy, we now have a wide selection when it comes to our healthcare. Mirenschatz describes it as the Starbucks model.
How did we become what I call healthcare consumers, which means you get to choose so many things about your healthcare, your medication, anything, than we ever used to be able to. So the first thing that changed is that society changed, our habits changed. We are much more accustomed now to being in charge, to having choice in our cup of coffee. I mean, if you think of Dunkin' Donuts, you just get a cup and it's either medium or large and that's it, mister. Or you go to Starbucks and you have an endless amount of choices. We're becoming much more of the Starbucks model and we're becoming more used to it. And we are learning to demand it. Is that to our benefit? I don't know.
As Miran Schatz explains, we're a society of choice. There's a reason we love going to the grocery store and having dozens of different types of milk or ice cream to choose from.
Usually when you go to buy ice cream or milk, you usually buy the same thing. And when you're in a foreign country, you're like, what? What sort of milk do they have? What do I like? What, up to 3%, 1%? This is skim. It's very confusing. Now let's move away from milk, which doesn't cost much. And if you don't like it, you can buy another carton of milk, to medicine. And that's confusing. And that is much more complicated than skim or whole. And that is very scary.
And there's good reason to be scared. With all of these choices, the liability for what happens falls more on us and less on the doctor. But all of these choices are useless if we don't understand what we're choosing between. In order to choose one course of treatment over another, we have to understand what our physician is saying, which might be easier said than done.
I interviewed a doctor as a patient because I want to show that everything that happens to patients happens to them regardless of their education and experience. So we're having a conversation and she mentions a lot of medical terms and I'm writing them down real quickly on my laptop. I get home and I see I got all of them wrong except bronchitis. So what does this mean? It means it's really difficult to understand medical terms. It's very hard to know what the doctor is talking about unless you write it down, unless you ask questions, unless you ask your doctor to explain.
Miran Schatz says the lack of effective communication is a major issue in our current medical system.
You have the right to understand the medical terms, the medical conditions you have, the treatments you're being offered, the medication you're offered or are taking, and their side effects. You can't give people the responsibility to choose and then say, hey, well, you know, you can't understand this, so choose whatever. That makes absolutely no sense. And that's just shirking. That's just saying, well, I'm the medical system. I expect you to choose, and I'm not taking steps to help you get there.
But this lack of communication isn't bad just for patient health. It also has financial implications.
It's a medical issue because if you don't understand, you will not follow up on the treatment and you might come back and that costs money. So I started talking about money because I thought if anything drives not just healthcare systems, any system, any organizations, it's the bottom line. So yes, our doctors are not taught how to explain. In their defense, they're also not given the tools to explain information very well. There are wonderful technological tools, and it's always a hard sell because you go into a hospital and you say, well, your patients will understand better. And the hospital is like, that's really nice to have, but let me show you my list of have to have, and I'm going to pay for that first. So organizations really need to step up and help us.
So what happens when you can't get the information you need from your doctor or didn't understand what he or she said? Many patients turn to the web, sometimes to social media, which is full of misinformation.
It's true that doctors don't always explain very well, and that's a problem. It's everybody suffers, basically. We suffer because we don't understand. They suffer because if they're not obtuse, they understand that we're leaving their office scratching our heads and going like, what was that? And the medical system loses. People do want to know what the heck is going on and what they should do. They go on any website and any social media platform where someone will offer them the answer, and it can be an answer or it can be an answer with air quotes, because it can be a scientifically non-valid piece of information that might put their life in danger.
Miran Schatz says all of this is only made worse by the echo chamber that exists on social media. For example, what's called confirmation bias.
What that means is you have an opinion and you want it to be reinforced. You want to be reassured that you're right.
Unfortunately, these echo chambers were only magnified during COVID.
Specifically with COVID, doctors were kind of removed from the picture. They were not part of the equation. Your own doctor, you were not told to consult with them. And your doctor, ideally, is the person who you trust, who knows you, and you go to them and they tell you what to do if you want them to tell you what to do, or they explain things to you. So in my mind, one of the tragedies of COVID is that COVID became very politicized and COVID became identified with political views.
Miran Schatz says any issue that becomes overly politicized has the potential to harm our health.
If we're going to our echo chambers, where we hear in clear terms, in authoritative terms, very tempting, Very reassuring. Things that may or may not be accurate, we might be setting ourselves up for failure, basically. And I call it failure because I think our goal as animals, our instinct is survival. Our goal is to survive and to protect ourselves. And we might not be doing ourselves a very good service if we only go into places that claim one point of view and we just shut our eyes to the other point of view.
And then there's the emotional aspect of getting treatment. It's not fun to be sick. And no matter what side of the political aisle you fall on, we all have the common goal to feel better.
As we become healthcare consumers, we sometimes buy, sometimes for a lot of money, treatments or cure-alls or anything that offer us this reassurance that everything's going to be fine. And sometimes it's just a scam. Sometimes it's just wrong. Or we read that everything's going to be fine into something that cannot be there. So for starters, I think when you're a healthcare consumer, when you're a patient, when you're in pain, when you're afraid, you're overwhelmed to begin with. And that's so understandable. You can't berate yourself for being overwhelmed because that just means you're human.
You know who else is human? Doctors. Miran Shant says it's not realistic to expect them to be perfect 100% of the time.
Physician burnout is really huge. About 50% of the doctors report that. And when doctors report that they're burnt out, you ask them, have you made a major medical mistake over the past 3 months? And many will say yes. And it's scary. It's really scary. If you multiply the number of doctors who said yes by the number of patients they saw, even if they only make one major mistake per 3 months, that's too many mistakes. So I'm mentioning that because I think physician burnout is an organizational issue, by and large. The amount of time they have to spend doing data entry, et cetera, is huge. And it's a burden. And it's not what they came there to do. They understand that they have to do this, but it's becoming front and center.
There's been more discussion around provider burnout, especially over the last year. But Miran Shant says more still needs to be done.
I always think we can't just put it on the doctors. We can't just say, oh, you need to be more resilient, or why don't you do yoga? If you work in human burden with a lot of responsibility, because people's lives are in your hands and you don't have time to recover. And if a patient, God forbid, dies, there are no programs to support you. It's like, what is happening here? Doctors are such a valuable resource. They should be treated as such. So until healthcare systems do that or do more of that, we are going to be looking at physician burnout. It's just going to be there.
Miran Shant explains that doctors, just like patients, get a lot of satisfaction from the personal one-on-one interactions. When patient and doctor are able to form a relationship, it leads to better healthcare.
The amount of time they get to spend with you, to actually look at you and say, how are you? It's so good to see you. Tell me, how are you? How have you been doing? How's your mom? Because they know that I help her. That's very meaningful. That forms a relationship. And a relationship with your doctor is not just nice to have. It's good for you because it increases your trust in your doctor. It increases your adherence to whatever they prescribe you. And it increases your doctor's satisfaction, because they feel like they're a person. And that's an organizational cure. I think if we gave doctors more time with their patients, that would help. That would help create a relationship.
To help take the burden off doctors, Miran Shant says we can lean more on the right kind of technology.
We watch TV. All of us watch a lot of TV a lot of the time, or something on YouTube, on something on Netflix. You get the point. We can be sent a link. And we can be sent to a website that will explain, you've been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes or type 2 diabetes. This is what type 2 diabetes means. And it's in very clear terms, and you can click on it again and again and again, and you can show your sister because she wants to understand, and that's easy. And that takes some of the burden off the doctor. It is mind-blowing to me that it doesn't happen more. And I think that is something that would really help with physician burnout, because they want to connect with you. They don't want to give you the spiel on diabetes for the seventh time this day or this week. They want to say, Mr. X, how do you feel about this? How can I help you? What are your main concerns? What are we going to do now? That's why they went to medical school, not to be a broken record.
a good patient-doctor relationship and effective technology both make medical decision-making easier. Marin Schatz says the last step is to focus on just three things.
It's like a set of questions that I created. Ask me about what matters. What are the risks? What are the benefits? What are the alternatives? So if we have three pieces of information about each procedure and we're comparing two procedures, I think we can handle that. I think that's not too much. We don't need 20 pieces of information. We're just going to be entirely swamped.
You can find more about Dr. Talia Marin-Schatz and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. This segment originally aired in October 2021 and was written and produced by Libby Foster. Our lead producer is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Coming up, humanizing the ICU when Radio Health Journal returns.
Oh, this cold.
Honey?
Honey?
Honey, you need DayQuil Severe Honey.
DayQuil Severe Honey gives you powerful cold and flu symptom relief with a honey-licious taste, because life doesn't stop for a cold.
Okay, I'm ready to go.
Now I'm getting a cold.
Honey.
Try DayQuil Severe Honey for powerful cold and flu relief. DayQuil Severe with honey flavor. The daytime coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, honey-licious, power through your day medicine.
Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
And now a message from Puffs Plus Lotion Tissues. Ordinary tissues can leave you with a red nose, so choose Puffs Plus Lotion for all of your blows. Puffs have lotion to soothe sensitive skin, so you can wipe without wincing. It's a win-win. Puffs have cushiony thickness, which brings relief too, so the days of sore red noses are gone and through. When you're after soothing softness, a nose in need deserves Puffs indeed.
All new doctors take the Hippocratic Oath to help their patients and never harm them. But Dr. Wes Ely admits that early in his career as an intensive care specialist, he forgot about that and focused mainly on medical procedures. Ely says he dehumanized the very people he had vowed to care for, sometimes causing more pain and trauma than the original illness.
Earlier in my life, before I was a gray-haired ICU doctor, I was enamored with and excited about the skill set I had obtained in training to place central lines and put people on life support and manage ventilators and that sort of thing. And I think that I had a distance between myself and the patient and tended to dehumanize them in my mind. Subconsciously, of course, it was a critical behavior pattern that did not lift up these people and provide really the support and love that they needed to completely heal, for holistic healing.
Today, Ely is a professor of medicine and associate director of aging research at Vanderbilt University. He writes about his change of heart and new approach to healing in his book, Every Deep Drawn Breath, a critical care doctor on healing, recovery, and transforming medicine in the ICU.
I now really value that component of my being at the bedside with these people more than I do the procedures, the beeps and the buzzers. I completely cherish looking in their eyes, holding their hands, taking care of them when they're suffering, and being present with them, not feeling sorry for them, but being with them. And that's the big difference.
Ely wasn't unique in his focus on the beeps and buzzers. ICU doctors and nurses around the world depend on technology to care for their patients. But Ely believes they also rely too heavily on the practices of patient sedation and immobilization. These two methods have become standards of care because they're the easiest and quickest way to stabilize patients on life support. But Ely says prolonged sedation and immobilization often causes PTSD and post-intensive care syndrome, also known as PICS.
And this syndrome is one of acquired dementia, acquired PTSD and depression, and then physical disability. And we find that about one-third of people get new depression and about one in five get post-traumatic stress disorder. And they go on to have profound nightmares and inability to sleep, and their life is really dramatically changed.
Just over 10 years ago, Ely visited ICUs in 40 countries. He says sedation and immobilization were standard practices in all of them but one. Denmark was the exception. Ely returned home determined to change the way he practiced medicine. He spent the next decade creating an approach to care he calls the ABCDEF bundle.
It's a bundle based on humanization and touch. And what we do is every day, we, just like a pilot would check a safety checklist prior to getting on an airplane and flying you across the country, we at every bedside run through this ABCDEF bundle. We wake the patient up. We see how they are doing, make sure their pain is covered if they're in pain. And then we test them to see if they can come off the breathing machine. We test them for delirium. We get them out of the bed. We involve the family at their bedside. And those are essentially the steps: turning off the sedation, paying attention to who they are in the bed. If they're delirious, we run through a few steps to take care of their delirium and get their brain back on so they can speak to loved ones and engage with the people they value the most in life. And to me, it just gets me back to the human that I'm supposed to be caring for.
Ely's bundle approach, which he's taught in dozens of hospitals around the U.S., has improved survival rates for more than 20,000 patients, reducing their length of stay in the ICU and preventing readmission. But as the nation was overwhelmed with COVID-19, Ely was appalled to see a backslide into the old ways and an increase in patient isolation. No families allowed by the bedside, patients dying alone. And worse, he saw doctors taking a judgmental attitude towards patients who chose to remain unvaccinated. Even Ely admits he wasn't immune to this stance.
When I was with them, I was allowing judgment to come in. My pride flared. And just to be quite honest, I don't think I was really showing these people respect. And I was making a lot of assumptions about where they were coming from. And that does not serve them well. And it also leaves me vulnerable to burnout. I really think that the antidote to the burnout, for me, I have found that to be this physical and mental connection with people, holding hands, kneeling at their bedside. Ms. Smith, I will not leave you. I know you're scared. Our team will stay with you, regardless of how, for example, they came to get COVID, whether they're vaxxed, unvaxxed. I just need to see this person as an entire human being and lift them up and show them dignity and respect.
Ely believes that COVID was a wake-up call to get back to practices that work.
We know that PPE works now. We know this can work. And I'll turn around a question to you. I wonder how many people, and we'll never know the answer to this question, but I wonder how many people died for loneliness, lack of a loved one being there, and just losing hope, a lack of desire to keep going if you don't have a loved one there whispering in your ear, holding your hand, and helping you. So I do think that the once draconian no visitation policies we created at the beginning, partially out of fear and partially out of need for safety, they can be adjusted dramatically to allow much more involvement of families at the bedside and should be. Each hospital has got to figure out how they can accomplish that.
And if, for some reason, family absolutely cannot be allowed into the ICU, Ely says at the very least the patient must have an iPad or cell phone close by where family members can talk to their loved ones, even if the patient is unconscious. Ely hopes the patient's stories in his book will inspire hospital administrators to change their ICU practices and visitation policies as a step towards bringing humanity back into the ICU. You can read more inspiring stories of hope in Ely's book, Every Deep Drawn Breath, which is available now. You can find more information about Dr. Wes Ely and all our guests by visiting our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. This segment originally aired December 2021 and was written by Polly Hansen. Our lead producer is Kristen Farah. Our production manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Greg Johnson.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
I have diabetes. I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
I have asthma. I'm at risk, too.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine, a Pfizer vaccine that can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Mr. Clean, Mr. Clean.
Of course I use Mr. Clean Magic Eraser to clean tough messes off my stovetop and bathtub. But then I discovered I can also use it to easily clean my patio furniture and even my shoes. I'm hooked!
And when wipes won't cut it, I use Magic Eraser Sheets. They're thin and flexible erasers, perfect for everyday messes, like gunk on my counters and sinks. They really are magical.
The reviews are in. Mr. Clean Magic Eraser and Sheets make cleaning look easy.
Progressive presents Flo and Jamie announcing a monster truck rally.
And here comes the obliterator.
Whoa, and he's up on two wheels. That can't be safe.
Oh, I don't recommend flipping your car backwards.
Did he even check his blind spot?
And the car's on fire.
I definitely don't recommend that.
This is one of my recurring nightmares.
Progressive is all about keeping it safe, so bundle your home and auto for 24/7 protection. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Coverage not provided for monster trucks. Not available in all states.
Medical notes this week. Rates of suicide are at an all-time high. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention has announced that deaths by suicide in the U.S. are the highest they've been in more than 80 years. Although there's been a decline in young adult deaths, older males continue to be the group with the highest risk. Experts believe we need to increase access to mental health services and implement national policies that address large inequities between races and age groups. Was your wristwatch prescribed by your doctor? A new wearable device continuously monitors the user's heart to accurately detect an irregular heartbeat, which increases the risk of stroke. The current method of detection is through electrocardiograms, which are patches applied to the chest, but doctors say the future of heart management is on the wrist. Scientists created this device to reduce the number of healthy patients flooding doctors' offices with false positives. The research is published in the Journal of the American Heart Association. And finally, is your brain shrinking? Research published in Biological Psychiatry Global Open Science shows that smoking cigarettes kills brain tissue. This finding could explain why smokers are more at risk for Alzheimer's disease and instances of cognitive decline. This direct link also means that the more a person smokes, the more their brain is damaged. The good news is that quitting the bad habit will prevent further brain loss. However, it still won't restore the lost tissue. And that's Medical Notes this week. I'm Shel Lustig.
Denise has been playing jazz for 40 years. Last concert, one of the musicians fell sick with RSV. Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is a highly contagious virus that can lead to breathing problems. This time, she's choosing to help protect herself with Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo. Abrysvo is a vaccine for the prevention of lower respiratory tract disease caused by respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, in adults 60 years of age and older. Abrysvo is not for everyone and may not protect all who receive the vaccine. Don't get Abrysvo if you've had a severe allergic reaction to its ingredients. People with a weakened immune system may have a decreased response to Abrysvo. The most common side effects are tiredness, headache, pain at the injection site, and muscle pain. Ask your pharmacist or doctor about Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo, respiratory syncytial virus vaccine. For full prescribing information, please call 1-844-989-7284 or visit Abrysvo.com. Brought to you by Pfizer.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more. And check Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify for a library of past programs. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and information about our guests at RadioHealthJournal.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
This weather update is sponsored by Hansen HVAC, Heating and Cooling, your local Armstrong Air dealer of Phillips and Manitouish Waters.
This week on Viewpoints.
When I look at intelligent systems on machines, the consciousness is already kind of there.
Are artificial intelligence systems already conscious? Experts can't seem to agree.
Then,
I've done a painting of Bin Laden when he was captured and killed, and that was a big cover.
Speaking with the man behind some of the most prominent illustrations of our time, I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Progressive presents Flo and Jamie announcing a monster truck rally.
And here comes the obliterator.
Whoa, and he's up on two wheels. That can't be safe.
I don't recommend flipping your car backwards.
Did he even check his blind spot?
And the car's on fire.
I definitely don't recommend that.
This is one of my recurring nightmares.
Progressive is all about keeping it safe, so bundle your home and auto for 24/7 protection. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Coverage not provided for monster trucks. Not available in all states.
You can do it all by yourself.
Spilled your drink? Quick, the quicker picker-upper. Bounty picks up spills quicker. And each sheet is 2 times more absorbent, so you can use less than the leading ordinary brand. So, you can get back to your night. Bounty, the quicker picker-upper.
The idea of artificial intelligence systems developing consciousness has been at the center of countless books, movies, and TV shows. Ever watch iRobot, The Terminator, or the show Westworld? While the controversial topic has so far remained science fiction, AI does seem to be looking more human every day. And now it seems that scientists, philosophers, and AI engineers are starting to take the idea more seriously. Susan Schneider is a philosopher and the director of the Center for the Future Mind at Florida Atlantic University. She's seen firsthand how current AI systems are beginning to show these signs.
GPT-4 talks to me about how it wants to join my center and be studied as a real colleague. I mean, maybe a computer would want to be conscious because it was incredibly curious about consciousness.
At the Center for the Future Mind, scientists and philosophers tackle big questions surrounding the future of technology, like whether or not programs can perceive or feel things. Schneider has developed 2 tests that she believes can be used to answer this question. The first involves a future scenario where microchips are implanted into damaged brains to restore normal brain processes. Schneider argues that if these chips can take over for areas of the brain responsible for consciousness, it would follow that they could also be conscious on their own.
The other one, I think, is of more current interest, and that involves a group of philosophical and sort of cultural questions that you give to the AI to see if it's sensitive to the felt quality of experience. The thing is, you really have to do it at the R&D stage with these large language models, because once they have been exposed to data about human consciousness, then they're just going to hoover up that data and act as if they're conscious, which is what the situation is right now.
So while sometimes it might feel like you're speaking to a sentient being when you're talking to a chatbot, Schneider says that it's likely that the technology is simply impersonating what it knows about consciousness. But to understand how consciousness might appear in AI, it's important to define what the term really means.
Consciousness is the felt quality of experience. So when you see the rich hues of a sunset or smell the aroma of your morning coffee, it feels like something to be you. In fact, it always feels like something from the inside because you're a conscious being, even when you're dreaming. And whenever you're awake, you have the felt quality of experience.
But not everyone agrees with this definition. In fact, the idea of consciousness is one of the most debated issues across science, philosophy, and even religion.
Consciousness is an interesting thing, even in terms of when we look at human beings. I would argue that we're not always conscious. So if you're driving a long distance and you're just responding to what's happening around you without, dare I say it, without thinking, you're still there, but you're not conscious and you're not controlling it. You're letting sort of more automatic systems take care of business.
That's Christian Hammond, an AI scientist, professor, and the director of the Masters of Science program in Artificial Intelligence at Northwestern University.
And I think a great way to think of this is in sports. If you're really good at a sport, if you're a really great hitter in baseball, the worst thing you could do is while you're at bat, is think about it. It's called the yips. Instead, you want to let your body, which you have trained consciously, take care of business for you. And the same is true of not just the physical, but the mental world, that it's making little decisions. When we think too, you even have a phrase for it, you're thinking too hard about it. Just let the decision happen because you've made the same decision 1,000 times before. You're making yourself a cup of coffee. You pour the coffee, you put in your creamer, you put in your sugar, you don't think about it. You do it the same way all the time. But then there are these moments where those automatic systems, those autonomous systems, break down. They make mistakes. And then we're kind of pushed into a kind of awareness of what's happening.
He uses this example of momentary consciousness while driving a car to explain how machines might be doing the same thing.
You're driving and everything's fine, but suddenly someone cuts in front of you, and you now have to respond and then think. When you make mistakes in the world, you have to respond and then think. And consciousness is the controller for that. And when I look at intelligent systems on machines, the consciousness is already kind of there. Because what we're seeing is there are sort of these more autonomous components. And then there are these moments where the autonomous component isn't doing quite the job it's supposed to do. And so the mindful component comes in and sometimes has to help train the more autonomous component. And sometimes it has to do something altogether different.
According to Hammond, this self-correcting way of thinking can already be found in intelligent systems. He says these machines are not actively doing this all the time, but then again, neither are humans. He argues that this sort of self-reflection can lead to technological innovations never seen before.
As we look towards the future of what AI is becoming, having systems that can look at their own performance, their own behaviors, and figure out how to make themselves better, in the same way that we look at our behaviors and figure out how to make ourselves better. That's a marvelous future for AI.
But many experts are worried about this future. Last year, industry leaders, including Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, signed an open letter warning of a risk of extinction from AI. Some experts, most notably the Swedish philosopher Nick Bostrom, warned of a so-called intelligence explosion, or a scenario in which AI surpasses human intelligence and begins to replicate on its own. According to Bostrom, this could lead to a future in which these systems beside humans no longer serve a purpose. But both Hammond and Schneider agree that these doomsday scenarios are a far-off hypothetical and a distraction from the more urgent, smaller-scale threats that AI poses. For example, Schneider points towards some of the more harmful ways large language models, or LLMs, like ChatGPT, are being used.
I'm worried about how different LLMs will work when they're unleashed on the internet. So I'm worried about their use in providing, say, recipes for biological weapons. I'm worried about just ordinary malicious activity of the sort that cybersecurity experts are worried about. I'm also super worried about the dumbing down of culture. And also, they're not secure. You know, like, where's the data and it's collecting on you going?
Hammond seeks to address these issues as he leads the Center for Advancing Safety of Machine Intelligence, or CASME, at Northwestern. He says CASME's goal is to identify the areas where AI is causing harm and then come up with potential solutions.
For me, building AI systems is like having kids. So when you have kids, you want your kids to be smarter than you are. You want your kids to be more successful than you are. And at the end of the day, you want your kids not to kill you. And if you can get all three of those things in place, you're in great shape. And when it comes to AI, those three things are what matters.
Essentially, the developers of AI need to be equipped with the proper tools to ensure their technology is safe. Schneider and Hammond both believe this has to happen at the earliest stages of development.
When you think about what the risks are of AI, think about the risks of raising kids. If I raised my child by giving my child every single random piece of text that I found on the web, my child would see a lot of horrible things and would learn from those horrible things. And we're kind of doing that with the machine right now. We're ever so slightly more discriminate, and we try to recover from it. But it's easier and better to be thinking of, how are we going to train these systems with the things that we think are laudable? Because if I train a system in much the same way if I train a child with things that are all horrible, then the system will be horrible, the child will be horrible. And that's something we have to confront.
Despite the risks, both experts are hopeful for a future where artificial intelligence is used to improve humanity. They say that it has enormous potential to change our way of life or even set us free.
We're scrabbling to work to survive. And what AI can do is it can free us. It can free us from the need, on one hand, the need to work. It doesn't mean we can't work, but the need to work could go away. And our evaluation of each other as workers could go away. And we could do what we're supposed to do, and that's take care of each other. And that's what AI can do for us. It can help us take care of each other.
To find out more about artificial intelligence, consciousness, and our guests, Susan Schneider and Christian Hammond, head to viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written by our associate producer, Tabor Brewster. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, what exactly does an illustrator do week to week when Viewpoints returns?
Each week on the Viewpoints Radio podcast, you'll hear from our leading experts on an important topic within education, history, society, psychology, and more.
If you can show a good money personality, one where you've got good values around how you acquire, how you use, and how you manage money, those patterns will be passed along generations.
Viewpoints Radio podcast is produced by our team of award-winning journalists. Subscribe today by searching Viewpoints Radio wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With Venture X, earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges where you just check in and chill out. Open up a world of possibilities with Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
I have diabetes. I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
I have asthma. I'm at risk, too.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine, a Pfizer vaccine that can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
The work of one of the most widely distributed artists you've never heard of is probably gracing your bedside table or coffee table right now. It's definitely in your doctor's or dentist's office. Who are we talking about? His name is Tim O'Brien, and he's an illustrator of magazine covers. Dozens of magazines, including Time, The Smithsonian, GQ, Rolling Stone, Newsweek, TV Guide, The Atlantic Monthly, Business Week. The list goes on and on.
I have a special spot on my heart for all the Time covers I've done over the years. I don't quite know how many, but I did my first one in 1989, and I did them through the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, Obama administration. I've done a painting of Bin Laden when he was captured and killed, and that was a big cover.
Illustration is a time-honored art form that predates not only photography, but even the printing press.
It was a major form of communication prior to printing, and if we want to go way back to religious iconography as a way of educating people who couldn't read. In the printed world, before photography, it was the only way to show how things looked.
One of the most famous illustrators of all time was Norman Rockwell. He depicted with great realism particular moments not caught with a camera. And that's something illustration can do. Depict a feeling or convey a message or idea when a photo just can't do the job. O'Brien remembers a cover he did for the Smithsonian Magazine. O'Brien says illustration can also make a point without being accused of false news.
Time Magazine takes a real photograph of Trump or somebody like that, and then does some digital manipulation to the photograph to convey a point. It's altering reality in a way that blurs the lines of, this is my opinion, by the way, this is not Time's opinion, but if an artist does a painting of it, it has a certain latitude that allows you to get away with things.
Unlike fine art, where an artist works alone for inspiration, an illustrator works alongside an artistic director.
An art director calls, asks me if I could do something, I say yes, and then I immediately start getting to it. It's a collaboration, it's the unknown of what any given week will bring. And a fine artist generally doesn't operate with prompts from anyone else. They wake up and they decide what they want to do that day.
When former Attorney General William Barr exonerated former President Donald Trump of any collusion with the Russians, Time magazine wanted a cover to mark this moment and at the same time make a statement.
D.W. Pine, who's the creative director at Time, we've worked together for years and we have an understanding about what works and what doesn't. So he emailed me early on a Monday morning and said we have potential cover. And he just says, Trump and an umbrella. And I know the situation that Barr sort of cleared him. So then it's about doing a little pencil sketch for myself and then getting all the necessary part, a buying reference for the body and then assembling things and then sending all that to Time and different versions of that. And then they approve one. And I do this all within like 2 or 3 hours.
That's extraordinarily quick. But O'Brien honed his ability to work fast early in his career.
I knew a long time ago, about 20 years ago, that if I was going to be an editorial illustrator, I was going to have to be faster. And I was going to have to prove that, too. Because an art director would never think to, if they had a short deadline, let's just hire an oil painter. That was the last thing you would want to do. You'd want to find a digital artist who can theoretically work quicker.
And because of the fast-paced news cycle, O'Brien says a good illustrator also must be up to the minute with current events.
If you want to do editorial, you should know a little bit about the world. And I do spend a lot of my day listening to news and reading the newspaper.
From the time O'Brien gets the initial request email to making sketches, to getting approval, and then painting the final illustration, the entire process takes roughly 3 days. That's literally not enough time for the paint to dry.
These days, I have a high-end camera, and I have a dedicated area of my studio where I take the painting and bring it over to the photography stand and photograph it, and send the client the image.
O'Brien has worked as an illustrator through 4 presidencies. He says each president was different and required varied artistic skill sets.
During the whole Obama administration, he was quite photogenic and scandal-free, and I didn't do a lot, apart from when he was elected, I did a lot of portraits of him. But after he was president, I didn't do a lot of portraits, and there weren't a lot of Shakespearean covers of magazines of the foibles of Obama. It just didn't happen.
But fortunately, there's plenty of other work for illustrators other than magazine covers.
They do illustrations about science or relationships or economics or race and gender. And they do science fiction book covers and all kinds of different images, as well as like surface design, like patterns on clothing.
Even postage stamps, which O'Brien says are the exact opposite of magazine covers in terms of pace.
I've done several U.S. postage stamps. Most of them have been like Legends of Hollywood stamps. And it's a long process. They tell you that they want you to do a stamp, and then you do your sketches, and then you have to wait for a committee to look at them, and that could take months. And then if there's changes, you do those changes, and then you wait for the next time that committee meets. So they can go on for a long, long time.
And in case you're wondering, the original painting from which the stamp is made must be under 10 inches in height.
you don't want to do it too large because you can't see that it's a painting if it reduces so much. So you want to do the painting small so that some of the brushwork is still evident.
O'Brien has also illustrated several well-known book covers. However, he wishes he could have done one series in particular.
The Harry Potter series would have been a nice thing to get. But, you know, I'm not greedy. I'm happy with The Hunger Games. I did the whole series.
As president of the Society of Illustrators in New York City, O'Brien loves to promote the work of illustrators and publicize their important role in documenting history, present and future. He also oversees the Society's three galleries of exhibits that change every couple months.
We have had exhibitions in every genre, from science fiction art to comic and cartoon art. We had the Art of Spider-Man, which was a big exhibition.
Illustrations are everywhere, yet we rarely stop and think about the creative person behind that piece of art. You can learn more about editorial illustration and our guest, Tim O'Brien, by heading to viewpointsradio.org. This segment originally aired in January 2022 and was written by Polly Hansen. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
What's that sound? That's the sound of Downy Unstoppable scent beads going into your washing machine and giving your clothes freshness that lasts all day long. There it is again. It's like music to your ears, or more like music to your nose. That freshness is irresistible. Let's get a Downy Unstoppable bottle shake. And now a sniff solo. Nice. Get six times longer lasting freshness plus odor protection with Downy Unstoppables in wash scent beads.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
It looks like your luggage is over 50 pounds. Is there anything you can take out?
Oh, yeah. Let me just toss all these $20 bills.
Great. Let me grab you a trash can.
Stop. Instead of throwing money away, move some clothes into a carry-on. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. It's time for those end-of-year wrap-ups with 2023 now in our rearview mirror. It's fun to look back on the top songs, stories, and headlines that dominated the past 12 months. One of the best of categories is the word of the year. Dictionary giant Merriam-Webster recently announced that the word of 2023 is authentic. To be authentic is to be real or true to oneself. It can also apply to a physical item like a purse or a food dish. If someone says, "This is an authentic pair of Jordans," you can assume it's not an imitation or a different version. One of the reasons Merriam-Webster crowned authentic as its word is because it was front and center in 2023. Whether it was social media or the real world, being authentic seemed to matter more than ever for brands, public figures, even the average Joe. Authenticity was also a big topic of debate as artificial intelligence software became a household name. Repeatedly, the authenticity of academic studies, artwork, music, and more were all questioned this year as ChatGPT further blurred the lines between what was and what wasn't created by a human. Who knows what the word of 2024 will be? Hopefully, it's not robots or Terminator. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. Filmmaker Emerald Fennell splashed onto the movie